I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. Rag Radio comes your way every Friday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m., originally broadcast on Co-op Radio in Austin, Texas. Co-op is a solar-powered, all-volunteer, cooperatively run community radio station. It's unique. There's nothing like it in the country. Rag Radio is syndicated, and we're rebroadcast on several other stations, and our podcasts are posted at the Internet Archive, at Veterans Today, and other places around the World Wide Web. So our shows have legs. A lot of people listen to us from all parts of the country or the world, the universe, perhaps. Tracy, you never know, Tracy.
Never know.
Tracy Schultz is my engineer and compadre here. How are you doing, Tracy? A little bit bleak outside all
yeah,
of a sudden.
Yeah, it's trying to rain. It really wants to, but we'll see.
Has fall started? Has fall
Maybe,
fallen?
I think, yeah. I think the first day of autumn was actually yesterday, so it's official now.
So that's why suddenly, I mean, it was like 100 degrees almost, you know, 2 days ago, and now all of a sudden it's kind of bleary and autumny. Although it'll be hot again, it always is. All right, we're going to have a fun show today. Roger Baker's here too. I always have to say hi to Roger. How are you doing, Rog?
Good, very good.
Roger's taking pictures, and which is a little bit below his station, but he agrees to join us and do it. We've got a really interesting show today, and it's, I think, a very significant show about a very significant issue and about something that maybe a lot of people don't even realize that much is going on. Geronimo Sun is here in the studio. Steve Russell should be popping in any minute because he's driving in from Sun City, and it's a little bit rainy out there, and it might have gotten him slowed down, but he'll be here. Geronimo Sun is a Dakota actor and musician based in Austin, Texas. He's originally from Minnesota and moved to Austin from Brazil. He's a singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist, and incidentally, he may sing a song for us during the show. And he's worked in independent films, featured in festivals such as Cannes and Cine de las Americas and a number of others, but I kind of culled it down. He recently had his live theater debut in Austin. Where was that? Where did you?
It's at the Santa Cruz Theater. It was put on by the Exchange Artists. There's cool. A production called Again.
Cool, cool. My theater days go back a ways, but they haven't come forward recently. So. Geronimo just returned to Austin after spending a week and a half camped at the Sacred Stone Camp near the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota with thousands of other natives and non-natives protecting water and sacred lands from the Dakota Access Pipeline. Steve Russell is not coming in the door. lives in Sun City near Austin. He is a Texas trial court judge by assignment and associate professor emeritus of criminal justice at Indiana University, Bloomington. Russell, who belongs to the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, is also a columnist for Indian Country Today Media Network and is a contributor to the Rag Blog. So we expect to see his shining face any moment. We have to set a little background here. Protests at the pipeline site in North Dakota began in the summer of 2016 and drew indigenous people from throughout North America, as well as other supporters. A number of planned arrests occurred when people locked themselves to heavy machinery and civil disobedience. On September 3rd, 2016, Dakota Access brought in a private security firm when it used bulldozers to dig up part of the pipeline route on land owned by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers outside the reservation. And the bulldozers arrived within a day of the tribe filing legal action. When unarmed protesters moved in to stop the bulldozers, the guards used pepper spray and guard dogs to attack. At least six protesters were treated for dog bites, and about 30 protesters were pepper sprayed before the security guards and their dogs left. There are a lot of issues involved with this, and a lot of it, there's Mr. Russell, Judge Russell, walking in the door. There's a lot of background to this that has to do with sovereignty of indigenous people and of indigenous lands. Treaty lands, I guess you say, and and the issue of the pipeline itself, and what have you. We are not going to. Hi, Steve.
Howdy.
We're not going to talk about fracking. We've agreed that because there's some differences of opinion, and it's not important because it's not the real issue at hand. The real issue, I think, has to do with sovereignty of indigenous lands. So I'm going to start with Geronimo because he just got back, and give us your take. What was it like? You got there right after the dogs, so you aren't all bit up.
That's right. I lucked out. I didn't get bit up. First, I just want to say, "Hau mintakiape" means hello, friends and relatives in Dakota. Thanks for having me here, Thorne. Thanks for bringing this issue to the attention of our listeners. And I want to say...
It's our pleasure and our responsibility.
Thank you. And I just want to apologize to any of my elders or anyone listening if I misspeak or say anything that's not beautifully expressed. Yeah, I did arrive on Saturday. That was Labor Day weekend. I got there around sunset, and it was really an emotional experience arriving there. They're really friendly when I came to the camp, and it's just a beautiful thing. It's not an everyday sight to see, teepees almost as far as you can see, the plains on all sides, and people from all corners of the globe gathered together for a great cause. So. I got my tent set up. When I got there, I first drove in. I found a spot by the Cannonball River. I said a prayer. I head up to the main ceremony fire in the kitchen area, the Sacred Stone Camp. And I listened a bit while people were speaking, and they were talking about the sacred sites being disturbed earlier that day. I hadn't heard really about the dogs yet, but that was just a couple of hours earlier. And I believe that it was actually on private lands just above the Army Corps of Engineer, quote unquote, lands.
Right.
And I sat there for a bit, and they were saying, "Hey, we need some people really quickly to go to the front lines." And I thought about it for a second. I was like, "Well, I just got here. I don't know." Then I heard him call again. I'm like, "Well, I guess that's why I'm here." So it was dark at that point. I got there and they said, "Hey, look, we need your name and information. You might get arrested, or worse. They loose dogs on people during the day today, and we don't. Now it's in the pitch black of night. We don't know what we're gonna do. They're gonna do to us now." So. We had a real brief conference on what to expect. They just told us, "Hey, we don't know, you might get mace in the face." Tried to give us some advice on how to deal with that. I haven't been maced before. I've been tear gassed, but we piled into the back of a pickup truck and headed off into the night. And I guess with a certain amount of adrenaline, there was maybe 10 of us. There was a girl and other vehicles, of course. One of the girls in the back of the truck had like an epileptic seizure while we were driving down the road. I think she was a bit worked up.
Right.
So it was adrenaline charge. We got there though, and there wasn't anything really going on at that point.
But there were thousands of people there, right? There have been
absolutely
thousands of people.
I think over that weekend it hit around 12,000 people. It was a massive, massive village.
Okay, Judge Russell, Steve. Give us a little bit of sense of what you think the issues are involved here. Unless you had something else you wanted to start out with. I mean, I'm turning it over to you. And let me say something, too, since we didn't have a chance to talk before the show. Anytime either of you want to ask something of the other, go right, or pipe in the middle. Just feel free.
It depends on what you mean when you ask about the issues. It appears to me that the people are out way ahead of the lawyers. Which is something that's not new to me. The Standing Rock tribe is being represented by an environmental organization called Earth Justice, and it's an organization whose agenda I generally agree with, but they are not really pressing the sovereignty issue. Now, it's hard to explain to non-Indians, but there's a difference between treaty lands and trust lands. And people are claiming that this pipeline is not encroaching on the reservation, talking about trust lands, that is the land that is currently held by the federal government in trust for the Standing Rock Sioux Nation. That's not the same thing as the treaty lands that were apportioned to the Great Sioux Reservation at the end of the Indian Wars. I brought a set of maps that, of course, I can't show on the radio, show over time how the treaty land has been diminished, but it was not diminished by agreement. It was diminished by what the Indian Claims Court called settler encroachment, which is a nice way of saying trespassing. Now, the Great Sioux Nation did go to the Indian Claims Commission and complain about this, and it was found that their reservation was diminished unlawfully, and a sum of money was appropriated in an incredibly unfair manner that I will not go into right now because it's peripheral. But the Indians refused to touch the money. They did not put the land up for sale. It's something that there's an identical case in Nevada involving the Shoshone, where the federal government is using Shoshone treaty land for nuclear storage and nuclear testing. And the tribe disagrees with this. The Indian Claims Commission apportioned a sum of money, though a completely unfair sum, but the Shoshone have refused to take it because they didn't put the land up for sale. Got the same thing happening at Standing Rock. It's not on the trust land. It's just north of the trust land, but it is their water supply. And when this very pipeline got this close to the Bismarck, North Dakota water supply, people got upset. And so they changed the route of the pipeline to be downstream from Bismarck. And so now it's upstream from Standing Rock. And you see the problem here.
Yes. Okay, Geronimo, do you? What did you learn? I know you talked with a lot of people who were there. What did you learn about their feelings about what was going on and about how this all got going?
I think there's a general sense of urgency and a mission there. I think people feel really strong about it because can you name one person in this room that didn't have a drink of water today or hasn't had water in their lives? I mean, I think everyone realizes, you know, we come into this world in water in our mother's womb. Water is really an essential aspect of our lives, something we need as humans to survive. And it just seems like it's also a basic human right. So defending the water there seems like a no-brainer to a lot of people. I think most people there just were really grateful to be there and felt real strongly about it.
What percentage of the people that you saw there or that you were interacted with were Native Americans?
I would say probably 9/10 of the people there.
Maybe. Almost all.
And most people. But when you have thousands of people, of course, then you've got a lot of people from every walk of life. There are people there from Australia, Japan, people from the Nation of Islam, people from all walks of life.
Okay. Yeah. Steve, this is a fairly remarkable thing that's going on. Isn't it fairly unprecedented?
Yes, it is in terms of the Indian nations. The mainstream civil rights movement pretty well passed us by. We never had a Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee or Congress of Racial Equality. In the American Indian Movement, we basically leapfrogged all that and went directly to the Black Panthers. So you had people who were setting ducks to be infiltrated by agents, which happened, and they wind up shooting at each other, both the Panthers and AIM. Which happened because you can sow distrust when you're worried about people shooting and you've got secrets that you need to keep from the government. The nonviolent part of the civil rights movement was too infiltrated, absolutely. But they couldn't really do anything
they weren't shooting
with what
each other
they learned because the people were going to go to this place. They were going to sit there until they were served, and they were going to go to jail if that meant they had to go to jail. Right. This is pretty much what you see happening on Standing Rock right now. This is new. And the commitment to militant nonviolence is new, and the broad support within Indian country is new. I mean, my tribe, one of the most assimilated Indian nations in the United States, the Cherokee Nation, they are sending supplies up there. They are sending bottled water up there. The chief has issued a strong statement of support for Standing Rock. The support is broader and deeper than I have ever seen with an Indian issue in my time. We all supported AIM because AIM got attacked by the government. We had to. But that's what that was about. It was AIM getting attacked by the government. This is different. This is supporting Standing Rock in their attack on the government by nonviolent means to protect their treaty lands.
Yeah. Geronimo, did you answer anything?
Yeah, I think he really hit the nail on the head there. You've got people coming, nations all across the country, really bringing huge amounts of supplies and just donating very generously their time and resources and effort. I think you've got a lot of people that are just bringing everything they have there and just leaving it in the hands of the Creator there from there, just to be there. And it's being there, you get the sense you're part of something like a piece of history, people uniting this way. Every day there, you're seeing there'll be a new tribe arriving. I think right now there's some almost 300 flags of various nations there. So, I mean, that's, while I was there, it was something really to celebrate every day, new people coming in and just bringing fresh life into the encampment. And it's a beautiful time, as I think it's a chance for natives and non-natives to organize around issues that really matter. And I think it's going to be a springboard for a lot of other important issues that need to be dealt with, like the treaties.
Well, okay. Has there not been, I mean, obviously this is something that sort of sparked because there's action involved and because it's centralized and it's pulled people together. Has there not been that kind of unity among the Indian nations in recent times?
Not in recent times, not in any time.
Not in any time.
I mean, so. Historically, we admire leaders like Pontiac and like Tecumseh. And Tecumseh was the man who is credited with that famous remark about one stick can be broken, but a bundle of twigs is strong. So we admire Tecumseh, but at the time he was trying to organize the Indian nations to resist. He did not get the support that he needed. And we have historically not stood together. I mean, we have, at this time, over 500 surviving Indian nations, and that's just counting the ones that are recognized by the federal government. That doesn't mean those are all there are. Although if you subtract for the ones that have been split up and they're counted more than once, like my nation is counted three times, then 500 might be a pretty fair number. I've never really tried. But they all have their own interests. Like just now, the Cheyenne River Sioux, part of the Great Sioux Nation, have intervened in this litigation in support of the Standing Rock Sioux, and they say in their motion to intervene that we have our own interests at stake here, and we are in agreement with the Standing Rock position at this point, but there may come a future time in the litigation when we don't agree. And if you look at their pleadings, the environmental organization that represents Standing Rock has mentioned the treaties two or three times in their pleadings. The Cheyenne River Tribe mentions the treaties over 30 times in their pleadings. Yeah. So you're going to see a much clearer presentation of the sovereignty issues. This is not to say the environmentalists are opposed to tribal sovereignty. They're not. It's just that they're using tribal sovereignty to accomplish a good end. Right. I'm not criticizing them. I'd probably do the same thing if I were in their position. But I'm not in their position. I'm in the tribal position, and I want to see those sovereignty issues out front.
Okay, we're talking with Steve Russell and Geronimo Sun, and we're talking about the protests, the Standing Rock Sioux protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio, and we'll be right back.
Wash away the ignorance, play it through the speakers just to make sure that they listen. And we treat it like prisoners in this country that we're living in. Everything is fine to the toil that we're swimming in. Companies are acting like this fuel is unlimited. Ignoring repercussions just because they don't have to live with it. Let me come and dig a hole up in your front yard. Guaranteed it won't be long before this cop comes. They saying that we hostile because we chose to make a stand. When the oil starts to spill, then it will desecrate the land. These companies don't care because it's all part of the plan.
Okay, I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. My guests are Steve Russell and Geronimo Sun, and we're talking about the demonstrations in North Dakota against the Dakota Access Pipeline. What were we just listening to, Geronimo? What was that?
A little Stuart James, right?
Yeah, Stuart James. He's a Dakota brother. I met out there, and he performed out there. Really great guy, and that's a video made. A lot of friends were in that track, and I'm really glad you played it.
Okay, cool. And we decided to take this opportunity before we start talking again for Geronimo, who is an actor and a musician. As I was telling you when we talked yesterday, and I was saying, hey, you know, it's really half our guests on this show, no matter what they are, in Austin, Texas, they also are musicians. So we frequently have somebody come on. And, Glenn Smith, our political analyst, also sang a couple of songs for us before. So you're going to do something for us.
Yes, I'm going to debut a song here. It's one I've been kicking around for a while. I've been working on some new material. It isn't quite as topical as what we just heard, but I think it's relevant. It kind of talks about being between two worlds, and I think as you hear the lyrics, it will all make sense.
Cool.
What are you living on? How do you get by? What are you living on? When the milk runs dry? I can't tell you that I'm different. I'm just living on luck. And I know you'd rather see me cut my hair and chase the buck. I would chew my leg off first. You see, I'm living, living on luck. Did you ever notice how a lotus rises from a pool of muck? I've been down and dirty too. I've been living on nothing but luck. Somewhere near the crossroads is where we stand. I might just pitch my tent and get some sleep, Mama, if I can. But the night just keeps a calling. It might be a long time till I hold your hand. And I know you'd rather see me cut my hair and chase the buck. I would chew my leg off first. You see, I'm living on luck. Did you ever notice how a lotus rises from a pool of muck? I've been down and dirty too. I've been living on nothing but luck.
Geronimo Son, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right here, you heard it for the first time on Rag Radio. Nice. Well, maybe not for the first time. I mean, you might have played it for some reason. But Geronimo is a singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist. Are you performing anywhere at this time?
Yeah, I'll be playing tomorrow night. I'll be playing saxophone with a band called Nick Armstrong the Thieves. That is if they still want to have me. I've been out of town a lot lately, so I hope I'm still on the gig. That's at Spider House tomorrow at 8 p.m.
Oh,
and
very cool.
I'll also be playing next week. Next Friday, there's going to be a solidarity march with the No Dakota Access Pipeline Movement and the Trans Pecos Pipeline out in Alpine. So I'm going to be playing out there.
Not in Alpine?
Yeah.
Oh, you are going? Oh, yeah, this was in solidarity with them. So you're going? Okay.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to go out there. So I think I'm playing Thursday night at Hard Luck with Nick Armstrong, the Thieves, again. And then I'll be leaving that night and driving out to Alpine.
Oh, okay.
And there's a march in the morning at 10 a.m. there. So if you look on, there's a, Big Ben Stands with Standing Rock on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You can find that event.
Okay, cool. Geronimo is a Dakota. Returned recently after spending a week and a half camped at the Sacred Stone Camp near the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota, with thousands of other natives and non-natives protecting water and sacred lands from the Dakota Access Pipeline. Steve Russell is also here with us, Judge Russell, who lives in Sun City. Is a Texas trial court judge by assignment and associate professor emeritus of criminal justice at Indiana University, belongs to the Cherokee Nation, and is also of Oklahoma, and is also a columnist for Indian Country Today Media Network, and is a contributor to the RAC blog. So, Steve, you had a perception about civil rights and some special opportunities that exist right now as a result of what's going on.
Yes, I think the opportunities are special to live in your times to the extent you can. And when I look back on my own participation, I feel good about a lot of the stuff I did, but I can't say that I made all the boats. Like in 1968, I was living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I had involved myself in Gene McCarthy's campaign, which was successful, and then the delegates we elected got shut out of the convention. Now, some of my friends in Austin will find this kind of funny because they won't remember a time when I wasn't running around screaming boycott grapes, boycott lettuce, or whatever Cesar Chavez was wanting us to boycott at the time. But in 1968, I was going grocery shopping in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, having never heard of Cesar Chavez. And there were some farm workers on a picket line in front of that store. And I stopped and I talked to them. And I didn't go in. And that was the start of an involvement that people who know me in Austin must think I was born with, but I wasn't.
Right.
Another thing happened in 1968. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Now, I had been involved in the civil rights movement since I was like 15 years old. I had been beaten up. I knew the smell of tear gas. I had gone to jail once by then.
There would be a few more times.
Oh, there would be many more times. But this is like when I was
a kid. I know
a
little bit about your history.
So King gets killed, and the community there in Milwaukee just kind of splits down the middle. The white people were really afraid, and it struck me that they printed up these posters with King's face on them, and they put them up in their businesses like a talisman to keep away evil forces. And they had these posters up in the place where I worked, which was a data processing service bureau that was inside a bank right in downtown Milwaukee. And the demonstrators that night, right after the assassination, were coming right down Wisconsin Avenue, which is where I worked, and I was on the night shift, and they asked all of us big guys to come and stand right by the front of those windows to discourage trouble. And I went down there, and, well, the first thing I knew, I was walking off with the demonstrators. They weren't causing any trouble. And what really hit me was...
We know not to hire you as a security guard in the future.
Well, it depends on what you want to be, securing. I was a computer operator. I wasn't there to fight with anybody. But it struck me during that whole deal that although I had sympathized with the civil rights movement from day one, I had never met Martin Luther King. I had never even been somewhere where he made a speech, and he was dead. And it's like I felt this incredible sadness that I had missed that opportunity. I treasure my relationship with Cesar Chavez. I believe he was a great soul. I believe MLK was too, and I never met MLK, and there's no excuse for it, given what I was doing at the time. Well, what's going on right now up in Standing Rock? You all who are between the ages of, say, 18 and 25 especially, you may look back someday at what's going on in Standing Rock and ask yourself where your body was at that time. Now, something may come of this, or something may not come of this, or it may be a good wave that comes along and then recedes, like the Farm Workers Union after Chavez died. It's still there, they're still working, they're doing their best, but they are not at their peak. The wave passed. Those of us who care about it, we still care about it, but it's no longer a wave. What's happening at Standing Rock is a wave, and I don't mean just an environmental wave, although climate change means we're going to have to make some waves. I mean looking back at Indian sovereignty and taking it out of the rearview mirror for a change. There are people who are standing up and saying this matters right now. Now, if Donald Trump is elected, we're going to have an Indian fighter in the White House. And by that I mean somebody who flat doesn't believe in tribal sovereignty and is willing to say so. George W. Bush was not that way. He was ignorant of Indian sovereignty, and he made remarks that were pretty funny, and you could take them as threatening if he'd meant them that way, but he didn't. He just had never read the Indian Commerce Clause, and he had no idea about the history of it. He was just ignorant. He was not malicious. Donald Trump is malicious. He understands Indian sovereignty personally. He is opposed to it. He's been opposed to it since he got in competition with Indian casinos for market turf. He thinks Indians have special privileges that white people don't, and he wants to put a stop to that.
Yeah.
And he'll say it flat out.
Okay, you're listening to Steve Russell, who gave us what he referred to, what he characterized as his geezer regrets. But Geronimo's son, there's, I guess, a few decades between the two of you guys.
Probably.
You know, and you're at a different point in your life trajectory. But I know you told me that this moved you, and you've had some involvement in activism during your life. But I think you said this moved you to doing something more, to more commitment, greater action.
It did. I think there's a lot of wisdom in what Steve said, and I think it held true for me. I can't say that it was like a thing where I knew I was going to go instantly. It's something I thought about. But then actually having gone out there, I was just so tremendously grateful that I made that decision. And I just want to encourage everyone that's listening, if you've been thinking about it, if you're on the fence, just go. Just find a way to go there. It's going to work out. It's a great thing. I think some people are afraid. I hear friends saying, well, you know, I can't go. What if this happens to me? I can't help out. Ceremony and this and that. The National Guard are there. They might mow people down. It's really not like that. Yes, the National Guard's been called out there, but that the extent of that is really them being at the roadblocks and it's smiling at people and, you know, passing it through. Yes, there's been people arrested and there are, you know, different ways you can be involved when you get there, but just simply being there, you have the opportunity to be exposed to some people you may never get the chance to see or listen to in your lifetime. There's some elders there that have an incredible amount of wisdom. They're like living libraries. You know, you can be sitting by the fire and all of a sudden you realize the guy talking, you've got Dennis Banks talking there, or then you hear Arvo Looking Horse. You have these incredible leaders and a chance just to be close to that, absorb. It's not the same thing to see something from afar, like Steve said, you know. So it's really, it's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. Do you want to say, oh, yeah, I remember that happening, I heard about it, or do you want to say, I was there and I saw it for myself? And you really can participate in so many different ways getting there. You don't have to go put your life on the line. You can just go out there and help the camp and be part of it.
I think before you start, Steve, I didn't even say something. I think that Steve and I both, from our personal experiences, and we would agree with this, that the fact that there might be a threat to our safety, to our well-being, never stood in our way, and often actually ends up being something that brings you closer together with your brothers and sisters. So, you know, I know in Houston, when we were putting out Space City, the Ku Klux, which was an underground newspaper, the Ku Klux Klan took us on as a project, and we were under siege. You know, they shot up our offices, they bombed our, you know, they bombed our advertise, or they shot through our advertisers' windows, they bombed Pacifica Radio off the air. But it didn't scare anybody away. It just kind of helped to create a tighter community. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a slight sidebar. But Steve, I think you were.
It's an important sidebar, and I agree with it completely. I was privileged to serve as Chavez's bodyguard a couple of times when he visited Texas, and he did not allow his bodyguards to be armed. That was a limitation that his enemies, of course, did not labor under. And our instructions were, should anybody start shooting, we should throw him down and jump on top of him. And it struck me that if the gun didn't kill him, we would. But those were our instructions. The Standing Rock Sioux leadership has said, when you come to the Sacred Stones camp, do not bring weapons. They know what they're doing. They are serious about this. They know somebody could get hurt, but they are not going to start anything.
No.
And they want it to be really clear to everybody if there is violence, who started it.
Right. Okay, we need to take a break. And then we'll be back with Steve Russell and Geronimo Son. We'll pick up right where we left off. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. Take it away, Tracy. Okay, we're back with Rag Radio. Thank you. Tracy, what were we listening to?
Oh, that's a great band called A Tribe Called Red, featuring Black Bear. They've been getting around, and it's perfect for today. And it was a great selection, say, for today for music.
Okay. And that selection came from one of our two guests, Geronimo's son, who is here with us along with Judge Steve Russell. And we're talking about the Standing Rock Sioux protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. And Steve, you were going to say something about how it became known as Standing Rock.
Well, no, actually, I was going to talk about the Sacred Stones Camp.
Oh, the Sacred Stone. I'm sorry.
Which is what they're calling the protest village, I guess you could say.
Okay, yes.
The land itself is owned by a Standing Rock citizen, a friend of mine, LaDonna Allard. And it's private property, although it's within Standing Rock treaty lands. And I'm sure LaDonna would look at it as Standing Rock land. But anyway, early, when there was no white people around there except French trappers, it was discovered that at the confluence of the river where the camp is and the Great Missouri, there were these stones made of sandstone that were just perfectly round. And they came in size from the size of your fist to, they say, some of them were like 3 feet in diameter, but they were all just perfectly round. And there was something about the currents at the confluence of the rivers that caused the sandstone to get trapped in these vortices and come out perfectly round. And the French trappers called that river in French the Cannonball River because they said it was creating cannonballs. And the English, when they came through and contested the territory, they just translated the name, and it's now known as the Cannonball River, and that's where the camp is. Now, the tribes in the area considered the confluence of the waters to be sacred and the stones to be a result of that. They revered those stones. They took them and used them as symbols of the river, and they considered them sacred stones. Well, now there have been dams up and down both rivers. The Army Corps of Engineers has taken on flood control and apportioning water to the farmers and all that stuff the Corps of Engineers does, and now the sacred stones are no longer produced. And tribal elders are kind of unhappy about that, but the stones that survive are still of some significance. And I think they call this the Sacred Stones Camp because of the environmental hook, because of the idea the sacred stones used to be produced here and they're not anymore because somebody didn't care. And we get clean drinking water here right now, but we may not in the future unless somebody cares. I think that's the idea.
Okay. And Geronimo, you just came back. Geronimo was up there for a week and a half and just came back just a few days ago, right?
Yeah.
And you were at the Sacred Stone Camp. I think it's something we were talking about a minute ago, that there was a lot of sort of wisdom to be gained from that. Tell us a little bit about the setup, how it worked, and about some of the people you talked to.
There's an incredible display of solidarity there. I think it's really well organized. It's something that's just been growing. So you've got medic tents. You've got a tent with more traditional medics. You've got one with herbs and some more traditional remedies. You've got there's garbage service. You've got water. You've got multiple kitchens. It's just a well-prepared camp, and of course they're in transition. They're preparing for the winter. I think people are there for the long haul, and you've got a lot of elders there from around the country. So it's a chance to share and bask in some wisdom you're not going to get on your phone or talking to your buddies.
Yeah. It's the style, the model there. I suddenly was thinking of Woodstock, but the model there grows out of so much. And when Steve, when you were talking about Martin Luther King and even Chavez and how they set a tone and established a style and a mode of operation, especially for nonviolent resistance, nonviolent. Started with Muhammad, with Mahatma Gandhi, of course. It lives, it has life.
Absolutely. Life. I was hoping that my fellow guest, who's the person better to do this than me because of his tribal affiliation, would tell a story about who Arva Looking Horse is and the really incredible mix-up about pipe bombs, which I find just hilarious.
Yeah, so some people, I don't know how much you've been following this event, but the Morton County Sheriff at one point had a press conference talking about why they had the roadblocks set up, and that's something that kind of came down from the governor, Jack Del Ripple, Del Whipple. His name is kind of eludes me, the correct pronunciation. But anyway, he had said that, these roadblocks are here because of the public safety. We had demonstrators with M-80s and pipe bombs, and it's a safety issue. There's been no one there with explosives, and the story's been going around that he misinterpreted. There's people there who are called pipe carriers. You carry the chanupa is a sacred pipe. Yeah. It's a extremely sacred and essential means of connecting with a creator for the Cheti Shakung, the Sioux people. And so apparently with talk of these pipes, sacred pipes, somehow the sheriff got the idea that there were pipe bombs there. But I can assure you that there's a very strong thread of unity throughout the camp that this is a nonviolent protests. That's something that's reiterated again and again. Everybody knows that we're there to do nonviolent action, and I think if you watch the videos, you can see that it's not a case of anyone throwing explosives or anything like that. Now, when you saw some dogs being loosed on people, that was a chaotic situation. And I think Stephen wanted me to mention, like I mentioned earlier, Arva Looking Horse. This is a man who's the carrier of the sacred white buffalo calf pipe. So this is something that's been passed down for thousands of years. I don't know what the equivalent I could give you for like a Christian equivalent would be, as if someone had the cross itself or something, and then somebody that's they'd been handing it down for generations. I don't know if that's a good analogy.
I don't think the Christians have anything similar.
No, I don't.
I love this. Before we go on, I have this in my hand. It says, the Martin County Sheriff described the September 3rd, 2016 protest, saying protesters crossed onto private property and attacked security guards with wooden posts and flagpoles. He said, any suggestion that today's event was a peaceful protest is false. The sheriff told reporters that he had heard rumors of pipe bombs. But according to Bill McKibben, who's the famous environmentalist, founder of a group connected to the protest, it turned out he'd heard rumors about ceremonial peace pipes. So, it seems like, well, you, Steve.
That incident you're talking about was broadcast on Democracy Now! And it's on video, and it's pretty plain who is attacking who on that video. And as to Orville Looking Horse, I'd like to mention that when I was a young man, just come to Austin, just started writing for the Rag. Orville, he was already an elder then, and I kind of consider myself an elder now. And he's got to be ancient.
You're younger than that now, as it were.
Oh yes, that's true. It would be just so ridiculous to think that he would involve himself in that kind of thing.
I want to ask what you think when we talked about the unity that's created among the tribal nations and the new modus, the new sort of commitment to nonviolent protest. What do you see happening next? Do you see it? You talked earlier about the idea of a wave. Do you see this as something that maybe that unity that's been created will be contagious? That it will, because there's certainly no lack of things to get involved in terms, especially in terms of Indian lands.
Well, I wrote a series of three essays in Indian Country Today that I've been thinking of putting them together into one essay for the Rag blog, but I talk about legal encounters of the first kind, second kind, and third kind. And this country is not familiar with legal encounters of the third kind, where you are truly outside the legal system and you're not counting on it for anything because you can't. And we will see other incidents like that, and I think that's what has all the tribes stirred up right now. The only hope we've got here is tribal sovereignty, because the legal arguments that are being made have to do with process that the tribes are entitled to that was ignored in the approval of this particular pipeline. Well, I got news. If we were to prevail on that theory, all they have to do is back off and redo the process, which I'm fairly certain they would do after these companies have already expended all this money in reliance on the permits that they think they have. So if it's illegal now, it can be fixed. It is going to be legal and constitutional in terms of the colonial legal system. So if Standing Rock is going to prevail, it's going to prevail because of public pressure, because something happened outside of the legal system. And that's new and different. And if it does prevail, we're going to see this happening again and again, where tribes are being run over on their land. They're being told how to manage their property, or they're having resources plundered from their property without their permission. And the only thing stopping it would be an assertion of sovereignty.
Okay, I want to take, we're almost out of time, and I want to take about a minute to talk about something else that actually Steve may join in with me. So, Geronimo, do you have any final words?
Well, I just wanted to say one last thing. So maybe some of you are listening and you're thinking, well, okay, if I can't go up there right now, what can I do? Is there something I can do? Yes, you can. There are things you can do. You can go to respectourwater.org. That's with a Z, R-A-Z-P-E-C-T, OURWATER.org. You can sign the petition there. You can also make a donation to StandingRock.org. And by doing so, you're helping them with get essential supplies. They've got a garbage service. They've got a they need water. They're preparing for the winter. So your donation can help those people be there. These are people that have they've kind of left their a lot of their lives at home for the time being. And so even a small bit of support. You can also call, talk to your Congress people. You can call the White House 202-456-1111.
Great. Cool.
About how many people are there on average, you think? It's like for the camp.
Oh, the camp? I don't know, since there were thousands there when I left. So I think there's still at least that many.
And growing.
Okay. Well, cool. Thank you both, Geronimo Sun and Steve Russell. I just wanted to take a minute to mention the fact that in, what is it, 3 weeks? I don't know. On Friday, October 14th, RAG Radio is going to be broadcast remote from it's the first time we've ever tried to do this from Austin Community College Eastview campus, and we're going to have the historian Doug Rossinow, the author of The Politics of Authenticity, he will be joining us, and it's part of this big 4-day event that's happening celebrating 50 years the 50 year anniversary of the RAG, which was the underground newspaper, which for one thing is RAG Radio's precursor, and we're still tied at the umbilical cord, I guess. And it's something, the RAG is something that Steve and I were both a part of, although not exactly at the same time, because the RAG actually lasted 11 years. But the RAG was an incredibly important phenomenon. And there's all this stuff happening, a big concert at Threadgill's, 2 days of events at ACC, a Gentle Thursday reunion, all kinds of cool stuff. And so people can look forward to that. And the radio show is going to be broadcast before a live audience. And we want everybody to plan to be there. We'll tell you more later. And be a part of our first ever live RAG radio audience. So, okay? Be we cool? Okay, thanks again, Steve Russell, Geronimo Sun. This has been, I think, very enlightening and fun. So we'll see y'all later.
Thank you, Thorne.
I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is RAG Radio.